Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello. And welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about a subject matter that frequently is very, very hard for people to be open and free about, and it is about caretaking. And I know just recently I have had conversations with as many as three or four different people who are in various levels of caretaking just in this last week. The couple that are joining us today, William and Nancy Martin, have done something quite special. They have put together a book for the caregiver, and it's the Tao Te Ching, and it's Compassionate Caring for Your Loved Ones and Yourself. William and Nancy, welcome to the show.
Pleasure. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Well, I'm so delighted that I had the opportunity to be able to see your book. When I talked with the person, Monique, who I've known for years, who said, Donna, you really need to know about this book. It's for caregivers. And because as a counselor, there are so many variables that I come in contact with that families are going through various levels with older members of the family. Sometimes it's actually younger members of the family, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And there's so much they contend with, and there is so much anxiousness and so much stress. So when I got your book, I thought, okay, let's see what they have to say. And I found it absolutely refreshing because you didn't try to use the shoulda, woulda, couldas type of stuff. What you have done is taken and applied a most gracious feeling and support of a person that is a caregiver in a way and manner that I think contributes to them being able to take a deep breath, gain clarity, and to be able to continue with the job that they may have in front of them. How in the world did you ever come up with this? What made you decide that you were going to do this book? And it's not that big a book, but it's power-packed. How did this come about in the way of an idea and in the resulting publication?
Well, thank you so much. We were delighted that that's how you perceive it, because our intention would be for it to be a book that a caregiver could put by the teapot or by the coffee pot while it's brewing, and just pick up and read a chapter and get some refreshment or some encouragement. I've been a student of and written many books about the Tao Te Ching over the last several decades. And so I kind of bring to the project this love of that old ancient Chinese classic, the Tao Te Ching, which is a short book, 81 chapters of one-page poetry, designed to communicate direct experience of life through the way water flows and the way bamboo bends in the wind, and a very, very lovely book, and it's had a big influence on me. About 4 years ago, my agent, Barbara Moulton, went through a caregiver experience with her own parent, and in conversation said, you've got to write a caregiver's approach to the Tao Te Ching. And so it kind of was on the back burner, and we thought about it and thought about it, and she approached New Line Publishing, and they thought it was a good idea. So about more than 2 years ago, we started the project and went into it kind of with a sense of glad to do the project, glad to work on it together. That will be the first book that we wrote together, bringing Nancy's experience with hospice and pastoral care. And then all of a sudden, circumstances changed, and Nancy entered into an almost full-time caregiving relationship with her mother. just as the book was in its middle to final stages. And it took the book in a whole new, if not direction, a whole new tenor and a whole new voice. I'll let Nancy speak to that.
Yeah, we had the book about, maybe two-thirds of the way completed, and my mother started her decline into the last few months of her life. And all of a sudden, those things that I had known as theories and as things I had heard around interdisciplinary team tables at the hospice and conversations with other people just became real in such a different way, as this was me caring for someone who I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just added a different perspective, a different level to the writing. And so Bill provided the poetic portion of each chapter, and then I added the reflections that follow. So each chapter ends up being a page, maybe two, of hopefully the combining of that deep ancient wisdom with something practical for someone who's in kind of any area of caregiving.
I want to give my audience some information about both of you. Your husband touched on this, Nancy, that you are a clergywoman with the United Methodist Church, and for 5 years you were the director of volunteers for the Enloe Hospice in Chico, California, and you've worked in training people, volunteers, and worked with families facing end-of-life issues. And for the past 3 years, you've been the director of the Still Point, which is a center for Zen practice in Chico. You still are a teacher. You are offering classes in education credits for nurses through seminars that focus on the practice of bringing understanding and compassionate awareness as caregivers. Because this is something people do have to be trained for. And I think most people that want to go in for nursing, this is something that they really want to do and be able to do well, but you do need to learn from others. And then, William, you have been a research scientist. You are also a minister. You've worked as a family and marriage therapist. You're a college instructor. You also teach at the Still Point Center for Zen Practice in Chico, California. You've written other books. And, in fact, one of them was picked by Oprah Winfrey. And it was part of one of her recommended books on listings. And you continue to offer education credits for people from walks of life that want to benefit from what you're teaching. I would like to just take one of your poems, Bill, and I want to share it. And for those of you listening, I'd make this comment too. Just to have it in a place, like maybe on your bedside table, whether you are a caregiver taking care of someone right now or not, to take care of yourself is very important. And each one of these small poems and the discourse that goes with them is good for anybody. I think it's great because it nourishes the mind, the spirit, and we all get soul weary at times. I don't know of anyone that goes through life just going la la la. I just don't. So if you're listening to this, listen carefully to what I'm going to be reading to you, because they apply. It's life. And if you're needing to give care to yourself, it's something you should seriously consider. This is on Let Go, and here is how it reads. Caring for loved ones with your ideas and caring for them with your actions are two different processes. The first arises within your mind and often brings confusion. The second is a direct experience free of mental voices and leads to clarity. The mind that wants to help does not know how. The mind that lets go of wanting knows exactly what to do. Both minds reside within it. Learning to live with both unlocks the secret of caregiving. Be quietly present with yourself in the presence of another human being. If you can do this, you will know the next simple thing to do. This is all that is ever necessary. Tell us about the discourse that you wrote with that. I know, William, that you wrote the poem. Nancy, you were living the experience of being a caregiver. What is the essence that this spoke to you when you were writing about it?
I think that it was that I had had enough exposure to providing care as a caregiving professional to have some ideas about what that should be like, and also just the life experience of having images that I had developed in my mind about what it meant to be a good caregiver. And discovering that, you know, the gifts of caregiving, one of the greatest ones is fatigue, and of coming to that place of having to let go of some of those images of this going smoothly or you being able to control the flow of it, and instead just discovering what each moment might present to you. So, you know, the whole experience of gathering insights along the way and just staying very present, because I realized that I didn't know what this other person needed. I didn't know what my mom wanted or needed at any particular time unless I would just be still and listen to her and let her share mm-hmm. that with me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important, but also think about how that applies in everyday life. Don't we all figure that, well, our life should be like a Hollywood movie? We should have all of these little scenes and little click, click, clicks, and boy, everything's done. Well, it doesn't work that way very well, does it?
No, we would like to, if at least not a Hollywood movie. Well, yes, like a Hollywood movie in which we were both the director and the star,
mm-hmm.
because there's a tremendous need that we all are conditioned to have for control, or the illusion of control, and the idea that we need to do whatever it is we're doing right, and be the right person in the midst of it, and do the right thing, and say the right thing, and have the right feelings, and have the right responses, and we just don't. Control is a complete illusion. All we can do is show up and take the next step. One of the famous lines from Lao Tzu's The Tao Te Ching is, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. Or the only step necessary or available in a journey of 1,000 miles is this one, right here,
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole,
and I think that's so important.
Both of us used to be ministers. We're not anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I don't agree. Once a minister, always a minister. I don't care.
I'm not a minister.
I don't care who you are. It goes with the territory.
Ordained with the denominations.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Yeah.
But you are still ministering.
Oh, well.
And that is something that will never be far from where you are.
I'm afraid not.
Yeah, no, it's nothing to be afraid of. It's a good thing, because that's part of what the compassion is that I think the two of you express so beautifully in your book.
Thank you.
You have a section here, acceptance brings change. Whoa. I think about what is going on in the United States as a nation. I think of so many people whose paths I cross, both through media as well as through personal appearances, et cetera, and they are just in such anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked, and this is just a follow-up of what you just expressed so nicely, William, clinging to how we think things should be brings confusion and despair. Seeing things as they are brings clarity. Clarity leads to effective action. Trying to change others leads to resistance and frustration. Seeing others as they are leads to acceptance. Acceptance leads to change. William, address this, because you were talking on it just a little bit. But when you were putting this together, what particularly pushed your buttons that made you say, this is something I've gone through? Where did your wisdom on this come from?
We all have an innate wisdom. There's two different kinds of wisdom. I think the reason I've loved the Tao Te Ching over the decades is that it points to the middle word of the title Tao Te Ching, the T-E, is a Chinese character for intrinsic wisdom or intrinsic power or intrinsic virtue. I think we all have that, and we read certain words that we think, oh yes, that's true, because it touches our own intrinsic wisdom. So I work with both my life and with my study of the Tao Te Ching, and saw that every time I come up against resistance and a frustration of, well, you mentioned looking at the world and society, and it's just not unfolding the way I want it to. And it causes constriction in my mind, constriction in my chest and in my throat, and furrows across my brow, and it doesn't do a bit of good to hold on to that idea that there's something wrong here. We think we buy the illusion that unless we are absolutely convinced that this is wrong and we must change it, it will never change. But the actual experience of life is, it's only when I relax into the moment and say, this is just what's happening, that I'm able to see clearly, and magically, the next step occurs, and I take action that leads to change. You've probably worked with people who are in abusive situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until that magic moment comes, if it comes, of the abused wife saying, he abuses me. This is real. He abuses me. That the clarity of action can arise. Until then, you've seen that syndrome of, well, if I do it just a little bit better, or he's going to change, or something's going to happen, or we're going to move, and it'll be okay now. And until that clarity of acceptance, he abuses me, nothing will change. We had a friend who made a great illustration but about the difference between acceptance and resignation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that people are afraid of acceptance is that it feels like, in our society, resignation. And he was using the illustration of that resignation is when you're adrift in the ocean and you keep trying to reach a life ring that just keeps drifting out of your grasp. And you just can't get it. You should be able to get it, but you can't. And finally, you just resign. I can't get it. And you dunk your head and drown. Acceptance is, I can't reach this life ring. What else is around? How mm-hmm. long can I tread water? Maybe if I get onto my back, I can rest a little bit. Is there anything else around? How far away is land? The whole realm of possibilities opens up with acceptance. Whereas in resignation, they just shut down and dip into despair.
I think it's a wonderful story. I enjoyed the section you had on no experts, because I thought, gee, it reminds me of the joke. Experts are those that fizzle under pressure. So I just, you know, I really enjoyed this. I like this perspective, and I want to share it with my audience. No experts, the great heroes on this path are unknown and unsung. Throughout the ages, they've worked with humble simplicity, merely one person helping another through the ordinary trials of life. Looking to experts will make us lose our way. The power of the Tao comes from within each person's heart. We merely help reveal this power to those for whom we care. We may help them do things they cannot do themselves, but the power within them remains their true caregiver. Nancy, this is something that I think is so rich with understanding, because there really aren't any experts. There's so many ways of dealing with things. There's not a black and white. When you were putting together your commentary on this, what stimulated your perspective?
Oh, I think it was having been on both sides of that partnership with a hospice team, because the people who I'd worked with ended up coming in and helping with my care for my mother in the last days of her life. And I really had that experience of looking to them for their skill, their knowledge, their excellent medical resources. But then I realized that there were times when it was just what I could do, and I was on my own, and that was good enough. And if you don't mind, could I just read the reflection for that one?
Sure.
We may long for an expert to appear and do everything for us, to protect us from facing things we have never tried before. We want to escape the uncertainty and tension of unfamiliar tasks. Yet we develop some of our most useful skills when we have no other choice. We trust that what we may lack in expertise, we will make up for with our deep intention to be tender and caring. The first time we change a bandage or help someone find a comfortable position in bed, we feel slow and awkward. But in taking our time, we notice the little things that might make it easier the next time. In all this, those in our care are the experts about their own minds and bodies. Even in this unknown territory, they know how to proceed. When the moment comes, we will bring patience and compassion for each other. We bring our willingness to try, and those in our care will bring their gratitude that there is someone to help do what they cannot. Together, we make the way ahead just a little easier.
That is something that I really think is significant, because so frequently, unless a patient is comatose, unless that person is getting ready to make their transition, or that you're caring for is just totally unable to speak for themselves, that is that people do appreciate. They really will let you know what you're doing and what needs to be done. I think of a friend of mine who, when she was dying, her sister was putting a salve on her lips and making sure that she had water in her mouth, because there was nothing else that they could do. She was on high-powered medications. She had cancer throughout her body. She was in a great deal of pain. So she was highly doped up. But the biggest thing that they felt was very uncomfortable for her is that she couldn't keep her mouth moist.
Yeah.
And so they made sure that that was something that was done. And her sister was right there doing due diligence the whole time, making sure she's comfortable. So you have this, and I know sometimes when people hear conversations like this, they think, oh, this is so morbid. And I want to say, no, it's not, because all of us are going to be making an exit at some time, or we're going to have someone in our lives that we're going to be spending time with. It could be a friend. It could be a loved one. I mean, whether it's, you know, an animal or a human being, it doesn't make any difference. Enabling them to make their transition in the best way possible and are helping them on that journey is very important. It's very important. But as caregivers, I've known so many people, they want to do everything perfectly. They cannot. It just is not going to happen that way. And then they get all anxious and all stressed because they're trying to be super perfect, and I don't know who's written a textbook on that one, but it doesn't work. And they forget about themselves. And then they beat themselves up when the person does pass on, or if the caregiving situation is one that is taken away from them, and they go, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that. And this is not the way it's supposed to be. So I really think that the words that you give here just are very important for those that want to be the caregiver, whether they want to do it on a professional basis or they're just wanting to take care of themselves. I think that this wisdom is really, really good. The last one I know, because when I'm looking at our time frame here together, no pretense. Boy, that's a big one. And it reads, circumstances may be painful, but we do not fight to overcome them, nor do we fight to overcome ourselves. When we feel weak, we do not pretend that we feel strong. Thus, our weakness helps us to understand ourselves and keeps us tender and compassionate. When we feel strong, we act with calm effectiveness. Thus, our strength truly benefits others. Both our weakness and our strength are used for helpful purpose. Boy, could that be applied to everyday life. William, when this was put together, no pretense, it's really tough when you're in a situation of being a caregiver you can't pretend very well, because the person that you're caring for reads you like a book. Their psychic level, their intuition level, it is right out there, raw and open. They pick up on things so fast, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
So this is well stated. Address this, William.
Well, it's, you know, we can't, it is very difficult to fool that other person. Who we're really trying to fool is ourselves. I've spent being a counselor and a minister, one of the traps in the decades of my life has been this, a sense of presenting an image, a pretense of wisdom. Not that there isn't wisdom there, but there's a facade of wisdom and calmness mm-hmm. and you know, clarity and, well, just a... I've wasted a lot of time in my life pretending.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, as Nancy mentioned, that one of the gifts of a caregiving situation is that the vulnerability of both people in the situation doesn't support the pretense very well. I mean, if you really try, you can keep it in place, but it's very difficult. And when you finally drop it and you find that you drop into a tremendous sense of freedom. Holding those images in place year after year, decade after decade, that's a lot of work, and I don't want to do it anymore. I
mm-hmm.
really don't, in any situation.
Isn't it nice not to have to do that?
Oh, boy.
But look at what you had to do in the learning curve, and in your little book, The Caregiver's Tao Te Ching, you have put such wisdom in, both of you have put such wisdom in here, that I really think it would nourish the heart, mind, and spirit of just about anybody that would pick it up. Because I think, just as I read about the pretense you have in here, learning from them, no separation, all of these areas of experience, these little short titles that you have, then allow a person to choose whatever they'd want to read. But more than that, it's like having a self-identity. So I think you've really put together a wonderful, wonderful publication. Now, I did want to ask two of you, do you have a website that people can go to if they want to find out more about what you do?
Yes, we have a couple. The first one they could go to is www.caregiversdao, Dao spelled T-A-O, caregivers, T-A-O, .com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other is thestillpoint.com.
Thestillpoint.com and caregiversdao.com. And the Dao is spelled T like Tom, A-O.
Yes. Those, both of those sites will, one connects with the work here at the Zen Center, and the Caregivers Dao site connects with the work we're developing around this little volume.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, for those of you listening, if you wanted a piece of material that allows you to exercise your mind, stress relieve you of certain anxieties that you might have, this little book, I think, is make a great bedside read. But also, if you are in a situation where you are a caregiver and you want to be able to nourish your mind, heart, and spirit, this is a charming book. I'd like for each of you to take just about 30 seconds and to leave my audience with a thought that you would like for them to carry for the rest of the day. Nancy, you start first.
I think it would be that each one of us holds that innate wisdom and deep compassion in our heart that is all that we need to see us through any caregiving situation. It keeps us filled with compassion toward ourselves and for the other person.
William?
I would say that to remember that compassion is our true nature. It's not something we have to generate, and it's not what we usually have been taught that it is. It's not a feeling. It's not calmness. It's something deeper and more powerful, and we discover it only in the present moment.
Well, there you have it. Some people whose lives have been spent exploring life's realities on various levels, both very committed to what they do, and now sharing their wisdom in the Caregiver's Tao Te Ching, which I know you would enjoy, in compassionate caring for yourself and for those that you love. And it would make a wonderful gift. for someone that perhaps is going through some very difficult times, feeling so stressed and so alone, this is a marvelous companion to have in a library. Donna Sebo here. I want to thank William and Nancy Martin for being my guests today. Much success to you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to give me a call, give me a call at this worldwide toll-free number, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. If you're a first-time listener, I invite you, if you'd like to call and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do exactly that. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. I have the most adorable photo in front of me of a typical gray squirrel that we have so abundantly here in the Pacific Northwest. And he's peeking out of a hole in a tree. And we've got a tree just like this one that I've got this photo of, this adorable squirrel. We've got one in our backyard. And the squirrels just love to go in there and stuff all kinds of things, and especially when they're getting ready for spring, and of course their babies are going to be coming out in just a short period of time. But this is an adorable poem that Rhoda Ward says. She said, "The gray squirrel scampers pine tree, limb to limb, puffy, cheeks laden with treasures. It's another chestnut day in the forest." Well, our squirrels go after anything and everything they possibly can get. They are energetic souls. I love to watch squirrels. And in the part of country we live in, we have so many trees around us. I'm always amazed at how they have their own freeway system in the trees, and they know exactly where they're going, how they're going to do something, and the babies, when they come out, they are more fun to watch. Because mom's teaching them what to do, and it doesn't take them long to figure things out, but they sometimes have challenges. And the acrobatics that they perform in trees just blows your mind. It's absolutely wonderful to watch them. So I have a great appreciation for those little squirrels. And I know that there was a time, well, a while back, I don't think people have squirrel for dinner commonly. But in many parts of the country, here in the U.S., squirrel was the mainstay of people's dinners, not just the hawks and the eagles and some other friendly critters, the coyotes or whatever, if they could catch them. It is just They're just adorable. They are absolutely, I know they're a member of the rodent family, and I know they can be a little pest, but boy, are they smart. I'm telling you, those little critters are amazing. Okay, I have some things that I wanted to share with you today. Don't forget, you can give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. I did want to say that I'm getting some information on programs and interviews that I've done. I'm waiting to hear back from the gentleman I did an interview in Oxford, England. We were on the air for about 2.5 hours, and he's going to be posting the conversation that we had. So as soon as that's about, I will be including that in my newsletter, which will be out next week. So you will be able to find out about how to link in with that and listen to those interviews if you so desire, but I also will be making an announcement on the air. And then appearances are going to be coming up, so I'm going to be giving you information about that. So all of those things, as I get every bit of the detail put together, you'll be one of the first to know what is going on. Now, I want to tell you who's going to be with me this week. Wow, what a lineup I've got. Tweezers. Yes, you've all heard about tweezers. We ladies would not want to be without them in our makeup kit. Well, how would you like to be able to find out how you make $1 million or a few million more? Well, putting out tweezers, beauty products. We're going to be talking to Mr. Magnet tomorrow, and he's going to be telling us how he did it, how it came about. He has a nickname. He's called Tweezer Man. Impressive? His story is impressive. So we're going to be chatting with him tomorrow. Then we're going to be talking with Dr. Larry McCleary on Wednesday, Feed Your Brain, Lose Your Belly. Sound interesting? Well, I think he's going to be quite interesting. And if luck will be with us, we're also going to have Rio on the air with us. This is a woman. She's absolutely amazing at how she can give information on nutrition and other things. So she'll be after the doctor if we're going to be able to get her. And then on Thursday, Peak of the Devil. It is a very interesting topic. It's about oil companies. This is something that I think you'll find quite interesting. Chip Haynes is going to be my guest. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with Deanna Minnick. And this is a woman that has put together a fascinating book on quantum healing. She's got so much information in here that you can keep it handy so that you can know what to use for certain situations, natural herbs, spices that can help you, and all kinds of different applications to go along with that. So it's going to be an interesting week. And then on Monday, the last day of this month, we're going to be talking with Ellen Galvin. She has put together the most charming book that has been authored by Bella the Boxer. So we've got a lot of fun. We've got some real good stuff, and I hope that you'll tell your friends and be sure that you tune in because I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit. Now, last week, I'd wanted to get into some information about crime scene science. I thoroughly enjoy CSI. I really like the layout. I just really enjoy those program formats. And I was talking with a friend the other day, and I said there was an old program called Quincy, where this forensic coroner was able to solve crimes. Well, that was the first of its kind. And since then, there's been a lot of different things that have come out. And CSI just does an incredible job. The research they must do to put this program together is probably quite extensive. And I just thought I'd share some tips with you about the crime scene science as it actually is in the real world. There's a woman by the name of Lisa Goff that decided she was going to check on some of this, what was real, what wasn't real. And I just think she did a terrific job. So I wanted to share some things with you. Now, by the way, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, those phone lines are open, 888-815-9756. When we are dealing with criminals today, we, in many respects, have more resources of research available to us, technology available to us, than ever before in our known history. Good detective work, though, is hard work, and it means you have to be very methodical about recording information, details, taking photographs, it goes on and on and on. When I think of what anyone on a crime scene has to do today and what it was like when I worked for a police department many years ago, it's just incredible because evidence can come from so many different levels. You just are amazed. Now, DNA, for a while, has been used to link criminals to crime scenes. However, there have been a lot of concerns about this because anything that humans interact with, anytime you have to do research of any kind, you can always have things doctored or things not done well. So there were a lot of people in the private sector that said, with this, it's almost like an open license to make everybody guilty until they're proven innocent. Well, apparently, there have been individuals diligently working towards developing software. And it is so efficient today that investigators can validate close as well as exact matches to DNA evidence found at crime scenes. Now, what's even more interesting with this is when they're able to match DNA, relatives related to the criminal can be included in that database of suspects. So it's really quite interesting. Also, something else that is apparently coming into play in a very significant way is bacteria. Mm-hmm. They said it may one day join DNA as credible proof of who touched an object. Now, how did this come about? Well, there was a study in March of last year, 2010, and this was done at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Colorado. They linked bacteria that had been swabbed from a computer keyboard to the fingertips of computer users. They were able to segregate each of the users' personal bacteria. How could they do that? Well, apparently, the bacteria that might be on our fingertips in this particular case with the keyboard is very individual. It is not going to be like any other bacteria on anybody else's fingers. So they now have this in addition. It's just incredible to me. And when I was reading this, I thought, holy Moses, what kind of training do people that are doing this forensic investigation go through? How are they able to keep up with this latest technology? How many crime labs actually have this technology? You watch it on television, you think, gee whiz, everybody's got it. No, that's not true. Not everybody has it. That's why it's so important for people to be trained in doing this. I know here in the Pacific Northwest, there's been more than one case that has been bungled, if you will, because people that were at the crime scene didn't know what to do or how to do things in a proper way. That's amazing stuff. And then, photo DNA. Now, there is a nonprofit National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I'm sure that you've heard about them. They analyze 250,000 images of child pornography every week. Can you imagine that? 250,000 images of child pornography every week? I just don't know how they do it. Now, they have a technology called photo DNA. Now, this is computer forensic stuff, and the technicians that are trained in this application can pinpoint similarities that amount to a digital signature. Now, this digital signature has a nickname. It's called hash, and they use that digital signature to identify groups of images created by the same person, even if they've resized or edited them. And not only that, but your online service providers, they're utilizing this computer technology, photo DNA, to trace and remove child pornography on their sites. And the law enforcement agencies can use it to track child pornographers. I'm telling you, the sophistication is absolutely amazing. And do you know that if you take pictures on your cell phone and you decide you're going to share them on Facebook or some other social network environment, people can trace, they will know where you took that photograph, because now everything is built into your cell phones, your smartphones, whatever you've got. They will figure out where you are. There is software that people can utilize. So if you took a picture of your brand new vehicle out in front of your home and said, this is mine, they'll know exactly where that car is and what neighborhood you're in, and they'll know exactly where you live. That's right. All of this is built in. So we have to be aware that there is a lot going on. I have a great deal of appreciation for the people that are developing it, because it takes tremendous thinking and an awareness of need. But we haven't seen the end of it. It keeps going and going and going like the Energizer Bunny. Who knows where we're going to end up? This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. RawEnergyRadio.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, I came across a story. I just could not share it with you because it is really fascinating stuff. By the way, if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756. Norman Adams, he's an author. He loved to investigate the unusual and the unique and sometimes, well, the extraordinary. He had this story that he came up with about premature burial and inadvertent rescue. Now, this takes us back to the 1700s, and I know that there's gobs of these stories out there, but these two really grabbed me. This is an account of a woman by the name of Maggie Dickinson, who was hung in 1724 in Ivertick. And apparently, she had tried to abort her baby. This was a self-induced abortion. And she tried to conceal what she had tried to do. Well, it was considered against the law, so they hung her in the town square. And they had testimony that when the hangman pulled and swung on her legs once the noose was tightened and the ladder was kicked out, she didn't respond. That she was dead, as far as they were concerned. Now, she was cut down. Her body was put in a cart by her relatives to be taken home for burial. Now, along the way, the family and friends of the deceased Maggie stopped at their favorite little tavern for a drink. And while they were all having a good time inside the alehouse, Maggie regained consciousness. Yes, she was there. She's back, I guess is the right thing to say. Now, she was crying for help. There was a local surgeon that happened to be there, and he helped to revive her totally. And later, she was granted her freedom. I guess they decided they weren't going to do the same thing again. And she was known for years afterwards. She lived a long, healthy life as Half Hanget Maggie. Also, in Aberdeenshire, there was a Marjorie Elphinstone. Now, this lady was buried alive and rousted from her, as they found out later, premature slumber by a grave robber who was trying to steal the rings off of her fingers. Now, this wasn't unusual. Grave robbers would try to see if anybody, when they died, if they were left with a lot of goodies, and they'd go in and dig it up because that's how they made their living. Well, they didn't get away with it because she came to. And then there was a minister's wife. This is a third story. Her name was Margaret Halcrow. I think the minister probably had a real test of faith because a fellow sexton, after she was buried, and she was still alive, the associate sexton tried to rob her grave. And guess what? She opened her eyes. Big surprise for him, but an even bigger surprise for her husband when he found her knocking on his door one evening after she had supposedly been laid to rest permanently. A little bit of unique circumstances, but anyway, thanks to Norman, we have that information. Now, quickly, because I know we're just about out of time, I thought I'd share some websites with you. If you're doing spring cleaning, yes, it's here. It's almost here, spring. Our flowers are coming up like crazy. But if you're wanting to get rid of electronics, cell phones, sporting goods, let me give you some tips here that I came across that I thought you might be able to use. Now, if you've got an old iPod, a laptop, any kind of a computer system, there's a website called RecycleBank.com. RecycleBank.com, it'll give you points for every device you send in, and then you can trade your points for whatever you want, and they've got all kinds of things listed there. Also, there's a website called Gazelle.com, which has paid more than 100,000 people an average of $100 for their used electronics. Now, if you have a brand new cell phone and you've got an old one and you've not donated it to a women's group or some group that likes to collect them, if you would like to, you can take it into greenphone.com, greenphone.com, or sell for cash, C-E-L-L for cash, and you'll get a free estimate of the phone's value. And some of the phones, they are worth like about $150 or more, even though you've had them. The average life of a cell phone for most people is about 18 months before they upgrade it. So what you do, you go to one of those websites, greenphone.com or sellforcash.com, and if you use their free shipping label, you will get a check in the mail. Also, Greenphone plants a tree for every cell phone it recycles. So they're involved in contributing to the green of the environment. And for those of you that have kids and you've got all kinds of sporting goods, you know, sometimes kids like to go in for a sport and then they outgrow it or they're not interested in it, and you've got all this paraphernalia around, well, again, you could donate it to a local charity or maybe a school and the Boys and Girls Club. You know, there's all kinds of good groups out there. But if you want to sell it, there's usedsports.com, usedsports.com, and they'll link you, the seller, of pre-owned sporting goods with willing buyers. And even easier, you can take it to a local Play It Again sports store. There might be one in your part of the country, for either store credit or cash on the spot. Also, you can go to playitagainsports.com. Well, this is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. I hope you'll join me for Tweezer Man tomorrow. And we'll just have so many good things to share with you. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.